Welcome to the Unlocks the Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are diving into the Miami Dolphins in this episode. Lots of change going on, and there's a new, right? There's the out with the old coaching staff, that sort of drama. There's some thoughts, maybe Tom Brady. There was that drama as well. But we've settled on Mike McDaniels being the head coach from San Francisco, and he's basically been with Kyle Shanahan since 2011. I find it interesting that there was this thought, this rumor that, you know, there's, I guess, some evidence to it that Brady was going to go to Miami and basically play with Sean Payton as his coach. That isn't probably going to come to fruition. It doesn't look like, unless they're going to hire Mike McDaniels for a year, then fire him, and then sort of go through this plan again, which again doesn't make a ton of sense. But I do think when you sort of go back and look at the history of Brady, one of the things that he consistently was actually linked to was San Francisco, where Mike McDaniels was the head coach. So I've always sort of found that linkage curious. It didn't make a ton of sense him going to San Francisco, but if you were to sort of play that out a little bit, this would be something along that line of sort of continuing that connection there. So we'll see if that's something that pops up. It's not anything sort of eminent for us dynasty-wise, but I'm just curious, and I wouldn't necessarily rule that entirely out as being a future stop in Miami there for him. So, and Mike, I think Mike McDaniels keeps some of that San Francisco interest a little bit in, you know, that's it sort of meshes with that interest, I guess. So Mike McDaniels has basically been with Shanahan since 2011. So similar system. One, I was looking at some stats and it's interesting. PFF ranked first in percentage of their throws in the intermediate. So that's 10 to 19 yards down the line of scrimmage, and that is one of the best places to throw it efficiency-wise. So that's a good that you want your targets to be there. That's good stuff to be. Those are good balls to be throwing. It's the most efficient place to throw the ball. Miami ranked sixth in terms of intermediate throwing. No matter what you think of Garoppolo, he actually did pretty well in that range. He averaged 12 yards per attempt. That's third best in the NFL. Tua, 38 out of 39. It was 6.6 yards per attempt. So again, you look at easy stuff, just sort of easy things to hit on, easy places to improve. Just getting a little bit more out of that intermediate passing game with maybe even a little bit more volume and with just some more effectiveness. That combination there, I think, could really, really help Tua there. So, again, if you just regress to average along a bunch of these things, you can be really, really good. So, so that's, I think, maybe the easiest place that they can juice this offense. Added Tyreek Hill. He was 2 years ago, he was actually 12th in terms of PFF grade in intermediate routes at 16.7. Last year, he was 21st in PFF grade in intermediate routes with 14.4 yards per attempt. That was actually down closer to the bottom, 93rd out of 115 in terms of yards per attempt on those throws. I think some of that was defenses taking away the work, and you can definitely see, you know, his PFF grade a lot better than his actual production. I think that can definitely point towards how they were schemed for sure. So I think that's interesting there as you bring him in. That's a spot where I definitely think Mike McDaniels has shown the ability to, with that San Francisco offense, to really exploit. 2 years ago, Gesicki was the best in terms of PFF grade on that intermediate throwing. So he definitely has some weapons there to really give to a shot in the arm. They ranked fourth last year in plays per game at 65.6, 40.6 dropbacks per game. That was good for eighth. 25 design runs per game. That was good for 10th. 59.3% design pass rate. That was good for 16th. 23rd in terms of the percentage of their throws behind the line of scrimmage. 6th in both short and medium throws. So that's good. 31st in terms of deep balls. in terms of their percentage of their throws that were deep. So not a ton of that, but getting a good bang for your buck in the short and intermediate range where you can really, especially that intermediate range where you can do some damage. That's some good, that's good stuff there for the offense. Hopefully that will continue here in 2022. 28th in terms of yards per attempt at 6.4, 3.4% touchdown rate. Again, that's bottom five in the league. 5.8 sack rate, again, right about middle of the pack with that. Last year, again, this is old data in terms of what happened with their coaching staff last year, but 26th in terms of running back routes per drop back. They were 22nd in running back targets per drop back, 30th in terms of wide receiver routes per drop back, and then 24th in terms of wide receiver targets per drop back. So again, not the fact that they went out and addressed the wide receiver position shouldn't be a shock. They actually double dipped with Tyreek Hill. They also added in Cedric Wilson as well. So good, good multiple additions there for their passing game. They ranked first in terms of tight end routes per drop back, second in terms of tight end targets per drop back. They were very much a Gesicki kind of plays tight end, but as a wide receiver type team, so shouldn't be super super surprising there. And I think he's a bit of a hybrid, if you will, in terms of wide receiver tight end action. He definitely I think if you were to sort of look at other offenses, you might see that some of the stuff that he was doing is actually credited to a wide receiver. So so we'll see there, but I do think it's notable, right? Not a ton of wide receiver production. They added Waddle, who we'll get to in a minute, but they also added Tyreek Hill. And I think he could potentially do some stuff in this offense that could be pretty, pretty interesting. So 20th in terms of red zone plays. They were 21st highest in terms of red zone rush rate. And then they were about middle of the pack, and 78% of their red zone rushes were actually from the running back. So not a ton there really to – it's low volume, and it's kind of spread out low volume too. So not necessarily a great red zone offense to potentially try and pick off. They were – good. What I find funny in terms of the expected points is people talk about, oh, is Gesicki the next Kittle? Well, actually, Kittle, that San Francisco offense, only good for 11.3 expected fantasy points per game. So Kittle's like a boss, but it wasn't the greatest situation. Last year for Miami, 17.1 expected points per game. That's good for fourth. So I find that interesting. Is Gesicki Kittle, or could he sort of fit in that role? That role is a little bit more than just what Gesicki was doing. It actually could be limiting fantasy-wise. So we'll see how that – I think that's an interesting thing, and it'll see how that unfolds. But that's like almost a touchdown per game difference between the two guys. 34.5 wide receiver expected points per game. That's good for 15th. And they were 23.4 running back expected points per game. That was 19th. By way of reference, 25th in terms of expected points per game from San Francisco for the running back position, and 32.2 for the wide receiver position. That was good for 22nd. So Miami had a better situation last year across the board than San Francisco did in terms of expected fantasy points per game. 32nd in terms of pass blocking grade, and 30th in terms of rush blocking grade. So there should be changes, right? I think that's maybe the bigger takeaway here, is that there should be some potential changes to this offense. And we've already seen, we've already seen it, right? We've seen Teron Armstead, for example, come over from the Giants. They also brought Connor Williams in from Dallas as well. And, getting patches there at the offensive line is definitely a good potential solution for them. So yeah, we'll be interested to see sort of how they go about maybe protecting Tua a little bit. But I think that there is some stuff where Tua can get some of that easy stuff that can really just boost his efficiency. And again, if you take your offensive line and go from 32nd to 20th, that could be a big difference in terms of keeping him clean. Some other stuff here in terms of his performance. Tua, that is, he ranked in terms of the other, in terms of stuff we talked about earlier on, right? It was, you know, he struggled in the intermediate throwing range of the position last year. Overall, his PFF grade was 67.3 in terms of pass grade, overall pass grade. It's good for 22nd. It's at a 39. So again, right about the median there. Guys in that range: Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, Jameis Williams, and Lamar Jackson. Only 2.4 big time throw rate. That's pretty low, right? That's in the bottom 10 of the position. Guys below him: Jared Goff, Jimmy Garoppolo, interestingly, Dalton, Daniel Jones, Taysom Hill, Tyler Huntley, and Mike Glennon. So, you know, the bottom 10 at the position. Guys just above him: Zach Wilson, who's interesting. You know, we talked about him in the Jets show. And then Tyrod and Teddy Bridgewater as well, sort of rounding at the bottom of the position. So I think there's absolutely I think the criticism, or maybe the skepticism, I guess, of Tua is probably justified to a decent degree in terms of his production. When you look in terms of some of the clean stuff that he did, right? It's break, you know, hey, he's their offensive line wasn't great. Like, sort of how'd he do when clean? Well, he was 14th in terms of PFF grade at 83.6. So again, that's top half of the position or so. But when then you look down at his actual production on his throws when he was clean, he was actually good at 6.9 yards per attempt. That was 28th. So, and he left some stuff on the board. Like, again, his big time throw rate, even when clean, is super low. So I do think that there is some questions there about his ceiling and what he can potentially offer. You know, and it's interesting, like when you look at some of the stuff where he's clean, he was really quick on those throws, one of the quicker times to throw on clean stuff. So maybe there is stuff that he could actually get deeper, right? He could, with some offensive line help, that they could potentially go and explore some deeper ranges of the field. We saw them limited in terms of that deep stuff, but it's interesting with Tua. There's some question there in terms of really what ceiling I think that he can offer at this point from his statistical perspective. New changes throughout the offense. Again, it's basically a totally new backfield in Chase Edmonds, in Sony Michel, in Raheem Mostert. Again, they traded for Tyreek Hill. Jalen Waddle last year, 138 targets. That's good for 20% target share, 24th in terms of points per game. 14th in terms of points per game. I think I said 24th. 14th in terms of points per game. 23.8% of his routes he was targeted on. 1.89 expected yards per route run. 1.75 yards per route run. Those are both top 20 percentile outcomes there. But again, left stuff on the field in terms of his expectation. So I think a lot of that you can probably point to Tua. Gesicki, 15.4% target share. He was 10th in terms of points per expected points per game, 15th in terms of actual points per game. 19.7% of his routes he was targeted on. That's good for 82nd percentile there. So we'll see. Again, I think saying that this is a great opportunity because of how they use Kittle is probably missing how well used Gesicki has been. So super interested to see how that is. And again, I would note, like, Gesicki's been kind of their best and most stable guy. The addition of Waddle actually didn't hurt him last year. He actually went up in target share. So it's not something I'm super, super worried about. The cost splits, I think, are interesting. I don't think there's a great HHG at this point. I don't think the offense is super conducive to it. And I think it's a split situation, so it's one of the lower ones. You've got two at quarterback 16 in terms of RDP. It's quarterback 17 at underdog, so pretty neutral. I think I'd rather take a bet on Zach Wilson than Tua. Is kind of my takeaway from the AFC. Again, he's cheaper as well. Edmonds, running back 36. He's 32 in underdog, so a little bit of equity there. Mostert, 68 in terms of dynasty, 57 in terms of underdog. And Michelle, 66 and 64 respectively there. So Edmonds, a little bit of equity, but not much. Mostert, I think the market likes more than Michelle, which is interesting. when you compare those two guys, maybe something to reconsider and just file away in the back of the back of mind there when preparing HHG stuff here going forward. Waddle, wide receiver 11 for Dynasty, 18 for Underdog. That's interesting. Even more interesting, wide receiver 14 for Waddle and Dynasty, 9 in Underdog. So Gesicki's 14 at both. I find that super compelling in terms of, you know, where those two guys are different compared to, you know, that it's so much, it's such a split, right? Waddle was so good last year. He's more expensive in Dynasty, but he's cheaper in redraft. And Tyreek Hill's been so good. Last year's a little bit down here. Now he's behind Tyreek Hill, but ahead of him in Underdog. I think that's an interesting efficiency. So I think if that's going to kind of play out, I think Waddle's price should go down maybe a little bit in season, and he could potentially be a buying opportunity. I do want to go back and just note back. Beginning of May here, I went back and I looked. Jalen Waddle at that time was wide receiver 13 at Underdog. And at that time, it was early on in the Tyreek Hill era there. That was just after the NFL draft, by way of reference. Tyreek Hill was wide receiver 8. So you've seen Waddle slide a handful of spots, and you've seen Tyreek Hill basically slide 1. So not super big changes there, but if anything, it's the market's cooling on Waddle faster than it is Tyreek Hill. I think overall my recommendations would be Gesicki's interesting from a maybe depressed in price perspective, but on a one-year franchise tag, you don't necessarily love that. I'm kind of avoiding this offense where I kind of pitch myself on other offenses like the Jets and the like there. I don't know how this offense massively overperforms. I guess if I can get a deal on Tyreek Hill, I'm interested. I think that would be one that I could potentially get I could get on board with a deal on Tyreek Hill, just because it's still a top 10 RDP, right? I think like that would be pretty nice. The problem is I'm not sure that necessarily the cost is there. There's not a ton of movement on him in the market recently. Him for Terry McLaurin in a second, 104 earlier on in the offseason. So, yeah, I'm still paying a pretty penny. I'd probably do the 104 aspect, you know, him and Terry McLaurin. I'd probably take him as well. But I think that maybe the bigger takeaway is there isn't a ton of action there in terms of his deals. So there's another one here with, like, Jahan Dotson, Marquise Brown. There's a bunch of other stuff in it. But that's kind of the valuation there. So I think that'd be a little bit more interesting. There's more to it than that, but that one felt cheap. It's Tua, Tyreek, and a first in 2 years for Mayfield, Spiller, Marquise Brown, Jahan Dotson, and Greg Dulcich. Like, Tyreek Hill is the best player in the deal, and you might be getting, like, it's arguable if the pick is better than anything else on the other side, but sort of when that usually is the case, like, that's the right answer. So I think that's a notable one there. So maybe a potential buying opportunity, although not a ton of market liquidity, indicates to me that he's probably not in a lot of trades because no one wants to sell low. So if you're looking to sell low, I think your opportunity is probably going to be in season to think about that. So that'll pretty much do it for this offense. Again, I think Tua is really at a crossroads. Like, he's kind of out of excuses. You know, there's not a ton to exploit, I don't think, in terms of the positions where they're at. Maybe Gesicki is like kind of like a higher-end innings eater at the tight end position, but that's pretty much it. And again, maybe potential buy lows on Hill or Waddle, but I'm not sure there's a huge, huge, like, smashing recommendation for this offense in terms of specific moves to make, which is, I think, the right answer when you have a lot of uncertainty. So that'll pretty much do it for this episode. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.